KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Top Dog Underdog, running Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays through December 1st at the Chapel Theater in Milwaukee. Top Dog Underdog tells the story of sibling rivalry between African-American brothers in a turbulent relationship punctuated with dark humor. Their names are Lincoln and Booth. The show has adult content and is not recommended for children. Again, that's Top Dog Underdog, running Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays through December 1st at the Chapel Theater, 4107 Southeast Harrison Street in Milwaukee. More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Welcome. You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. This is Isabel Sinclair here with Jackie Witt, a formerly incarcerated person. Jackie comes from a background of intergenerational incarceration and has managed to overcome these odds by becoming, for example, a certified peer mentor, and is currently partway through an electrical apprenticeship. Jackie is a strong advocate for justice reform and testifies at Oregon's Capitol for these changes. Welcome, Jackie, and welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you, Isabel. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm very glad you are. So, Jackie, I'm wondering if you could tell us, when you entered Coffee Creek for the first time, how long did it take you to become aware of the environment that you had entered and to see those relationship patterns of abuse? And how did that affect you?
The relationship patterns of abuse were very evident from the start. To be frank, those patterns of abuse are evident from the time you get to county jail. It's almost as if they start priming you and prepping you for what's to come. The systems are just so incredibly abusive to where they don't understand what's right and wrong or what's expected. They let you find out by making the wrong decision or the wrong choice and then giving you a conduct report or giving you some kind of consequence for the things that you do wrong. And when you get there, there's not a welcome mat, or there's not to say, oh, so sorry you've encountered this situation, and here's your belongings, and don't worry, we'll help you get it figured out, and how to, you know, how to live in this environment down here. It's go here, sit down, shut up, do this, change your clothes over here, take your shower, take your clothes off, you're not wet enough. Undress in front of me, bend over, spread your cheeks, cough. Just completely dehumanizing and disrespect. You're almost just in shock of all the lights, the sounds, the clinking, the clanging of the doors, the keys, the staff mockingly laughing and having humor, and just as if they were working at a factory. The looks that they give you are just, there's no look of compassion or understanding. There's just look of just like you're trash, or a look of don't talk to me until I talk to you. That's the look and the energy that they put off. It's just another one of those mechanisms that they just get you prepared for what's to come. And when I look back on it and think about the things that led a lot of people to prison, the things that the bills and the measures and the laws that were written into effect that had all these unforeseen consequences, and it's very strange to me that the crime rate is down, but the amount of people going to prison is up. And that's one thing that society doesn't understand. The justice system is not only a system that is supposed to hold individuals accountable for their wrongdoing, but somehow they have designed in many ways this thing like a business or an industry that places prison labor at the center of their of its enterprise, essentially profiting off the backs of this marginalized community. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't even know that when they call DMV, they're actually calling the ladies down at Coffee Creek. And what they pay the ladies for working that full-time 40-hour week at DMV is $69 a month. And it's just horrendously shocking to me that a woman that works at DMV for 13 years gets out of Coffee Creek and can't even get a job at DMV on the streets. And that's not all, the only business or industry that they profit off of. The prisoners essentially run the prison, all except for, you know, keeping prisoners in line or the security staff. They run the canteen, they run the food services, they run the kitchen, they make all the food for everybody, they bake a lot of the goods, they run the clothing section of it, they clean the institution, they sort the trash, they do the recycling, they everything that inmates or people that are adults in custody do and get and have access to are generally ran by the inmates themselves, except the actual overseeing of everything, the administrative part of it and the security part of it. And of course, the wonderful volunteers that dedicate their time and sacrifice their time to be able to come in and provide services for us.
So every inmate, if I have this right, within the justice system needs to have a job of some sort.
Correct. And it's this funny little clause that somebody wrote a bill somewhere down the line that says that people can't just sit around, and which is understandable. I mean, people shouldn't go to prison and just sit around. So they wrote, somebody wrote a law somewhere. I don't know what the law number is or when it was written, but the law says you actually have to work while you're down there. And what is more ironic to me is our community and our society wants to have a better community and a better society. But the only thing that our justice system does is punish people. It's not, it's punitive and it's not restorative. So if a person has some drug offenses and they're doing a lot of stealing in the community and shoplifting, they go down to prison. And then they work in the salon cutting the inmates' hair, or they work in the canteen in the warehouse and give the people the things that they order from their like a store, and they don't get to work on the issues that sent them to prison. So it's so strange to me that we would lock individuals up, essentially warehousing people, and putting people in a position to do work these industries to provide, so we could save cost for the prison, and they're not working on the issues that led them to prison in the first place. They're totally distracted by working 40 and 50 hour weeks in these things that the prison needs done in order to operate. It's beyond me. And I don't think the community really understands that they, you know, if I, which I do, I understand, like, if you're hurt, you want to see somebody have to be held accountable for what they did, you know, what they did wrong or how they hurt you. But wouldn't you want that person to go away, go somewhere and learn some things and heal from the things that happened in their life and actually come out to be a better person? Because that's not what's happening. And the illusion that they're going away and have access to all these wonderful things and these programs and these classes, that's not happening. It's just an illusion, because it's incredibly hard to get in those classes. You have to have a long amount of clear conduct, maybe 6 months or 12 months without getting in trouble. And, you know, the rules are incredible. incredibly strict in prison. Like, you could put, you could have a big bottle of shampoo, and you got a little tiny bottle of lotion that you don't use anymore, and you could put shampoo in that lotion bottle, and that's considered an offense called contraband, and you could actually go to segregation for something like that. So even the system in there is not designed to help a person heal or develop. You just really, you stop. It's so traumatizing to your system, you actually stop developing. And then if something happens and an officer does something hurtful or harmful to you and you grieve that officer, the grievance actually goes back to the officer that you're grieving. The staff doesn't even, other staff don't even receive that grievance. And so people don't even put in grievances. They're scared to. And there's all kinds of things happening to the ladies down at Coffee Creek. There's been doctors that have sexually assaulted people. There's been officers that have sexually assaulted people. The adults, the women in custody have been fed food that is not real food, that has been, I'm not sure what it was. I was working in the kitchen before, and we were serving the stuff that said not for human consumption, and I refused. I said, I'm not cooking that. And he said, either you do it or you go to seg. And of course I did it, but you know, you best believe I was back in the dorm telling people, don't eat it, don't eat the food, don't eat this, and tell everybody else. And they eventually got in trouble for that. But how many years had they been doing that before I was there? And actually it never got found out while I was there. It didn't get found out till I was, had already been out of Coffee Creek for a year. So, I mean, I share the things I do because I want to build awareness in the community, and I'm not saying people shouldn't get in trouble for the wrong actions they take, especially when there's somebody hurt or somebody has been victimized. But essentially, the community would want people to go away and be able to get some help, which I think people should be able to get help. But that's not happening. And if it is happening, it's happening for such a low percentage of the inmate population that it's a joke. That's what it is. It's a joke.
It sounds like you're describing a contradiction of a system where you understand the change people want to see when they institute this idea of lock people up. We'll take them away. We'll get them to change. But then there's this entirely different system that you yourself experienced with these many layers of trauma, of disconnection, and of deeply embedded systems that don't help and don't prioritize other people.
Not just systems that don't help and don't prioritize, systems that abuse people, institutional abuse. And when you get out of that system, you are so unable to even function as a person. Everything is set out, go here, do this, sit down here, don't talk at this time, get up during this time, go to meals at this time, go to sit on your bunk for count at this time. When you get out of that facility, you don't even know what to do. Like, okay, well, nobody's telling me what to do. Is it time to eat? Is it time to count? Is it time to go to bed? You're in shock. Like, a person, our society so much doesn't support people that have experienced the prison situation, that when a person gets out of prison, they call it reentry, but that person is actually disabled for an amount of time because they're so unfamiliar with how society actually works. They're used to the society in prison and the economy in prison and the structure of prison. It takes months to acclimate to regular society and to start understanding the social cues and start understanding how to put yourself to bed at a regular time and the things that you need to understand about crossing a street or accessing maybe some resources in the community or learning how to write a resume or get a job or get a place to live or get on food stamps. I mean, a lot of people that come back to the community don't have anywhere to go. They don't have family that is in a position to help them, and society just ejects people out of the prison and loads their stuff up in a plastic bag, and you get a gray sweatsuit and you're on your way. And to where? And to what? It's a disgrace. It's an abomination. That's what really inclines me to believe that this system is set up for individuals to fail, because they don't have enough resources or organizations that actually help people in the reentry part of the incarceration process. I mean, food stamps isn't enough. It just is not. People need housing. People need a mentor. People need a person that has lived experience, possibly, to help them be able to acclimate back to society. People need somewhere just to go, just to have things quiet around them, so they could just stop the confusion or the noise or the, you know, the anxiety that's going around in their head. And that's why I really appreciate Oregon on the peer mentor level, because Oregon is very unique in the way that you can actually be a person who has experienced the justice system and been incarcerated and can actually get state certified, as I am, to be able to help individuals who are coming back into the community after incarceration.
If you're just tuning in, this is Isabel Sinclair with Prison Pipeline, here with guest speaker Jackie Witt, a formerly incarcerated person, sharing about some of her experiences in the justice system. In your work as a peer mentor, have you had contact with people who have been just recently released? And if so, what is that experience like? What do you notice going on in other people's worlds as well?
So I have regular contact with people who are coming out of prison. And my work is very successful because I also have contact with those people while they're still inside the prison. One thing that is really unfortunate about our system is that if an individual or a volunteer goes into the prison, let's say a religious volunteer, our system, Oregon's prison system, does not allow that person to have contact with the volunteer after they leave prison. They call it a safety risk, and what it really is just another way for that person to be set up for failure. People are successful in reentry when they are starting to be prepared when they actually enter the prison. You can't wait for a person to get on the outside and show them how to be successful in reentry, for them to be successful in reentry. This must start upon entry to the prison system. When you go to prison, a lot of times it's not a planned event. So you don't get to call your landlord and say, oh, by the way, I'm moving out. You don't get to call the utility system. You don't get to call the banks and your financial institutions. You don't get to call your cell phone people. You don't get to do any of that. So when you get there to the institution, you have to wait on the availability of the overloaded counselors to be able to sit down and help you get that figured out. And sometimes you could be 6 months, a year and a half before you actually are able to notify these critical people in your life that you are not in society currently, and that you need your accounts shut down. So essentially what happens is that you have all this accumulated debt when you come back into society, and on top of the fines and restitution and whatever else, you know, stuff that you have due to your legal situation, it just it's some days it just, I'm not surprised that people actually give up. The average person would give up. And yet here they are expecting a broken individual with untreated trauma, undiagnosed mental health issues, lack of life skills, lack of ability to cope with anxiety or being overwhelmed. And they actually expect that person to somehow dig themselves out of this enormous trench of debt and burned bridges and closed doors and all these things that have occurred when normal people, average people, wouldn't even be able to do a lot of the stuff that's required.
Sounds like there's a pressure in incarceration and in our justice system that asks more of an individual on top of what they've already been through to bring them there, and doesn't support them necessarily in the ways that can help them grow and change.
They don't support them, and then they treat them like it's your, they treat an individual like, well, you did it, it's your fault, suck it up, figure it out, you brought this on yourself. When in actuality, what I realized more so recently is that essentially these people are disabled. I didn't know this until the last, about the last 5 years, but a person with strong ADHD symptoms or strong reactions from past trauma that hasn't been treated, those people are actually have certifiable disabilities. And here we are expecting people who encounter the justice system to be able to figure out their situation, sit down with maybe a court-appointed attorney and figure out how they're going to plea on their case, when oftentimes the aggressive charging practices of the district attorney, they stack up all these charges on maybe just one incident, and then essentially people are bullied into taking a plea, maybe because they don't, you know, they're saying, if you take a plea, we'll give you 2 years, but if you fight it, you could get 6. And so they don't understand the justice system. I mean, people that go to school for years and years and years don't even fully understand the law and how it's written. But yet a person with mental health issues, lack of life skills, untreated trauma, in the middle of domestic violence, which led to addictions and dysfunction. I mean, I just don't get it. I just don't get how America, one of the most prosperous countries in the world, could be the global jailer. We have more people in prison in this country than anywhere in the world. And now that I'm listening to myself, I realize that might be why we're so rich as a country, because we get rich off the prison industrial complex. We get rich off the backs of broken people, marginalized people. And it's sad and sickening. I have to take pause sometimes because I recognize, as a person that could be perceived as white, and the experiences that I had were of a person that is perceived as white. But I do have to acknowledge that I couldn't imagine how worse it would have been if I was a person of color. If I was a black person or a Hispanic person, I am Native American, but I could pass for white. So I really do get the white privilege treatment. Even in these awful, horrific circumstances, I still get the white privilege treatment. And I do need to add that African American people are overrepresented in our justice system, as well as all people of color. And not enough people are talking about that.
Jackie, I want to thank you so much for your time with me here today, and for what you've had to share. The very least I can say, it's definitely enlightening on sheds a little light on what our justice system really does look like at the individual level. And I appreciate the strength it takes to be able to share what you have been through.
I really appreciate being here. It's my pleasure. What I can say is I used to be very angry at my mom. I was very hurt that, you know, she's also formerly incarcerated, and I remember the second time she was in prison, and it was quite a long time, and I just remember being so angry at her and just being so hurt and resentful and saying to myself that if I ever had kids, I would never do the things that my mom did to, you know, that I would never do those same things to my children. And here it is. I grew up and I did many of the same things that my mom did. And just recently, after sitting down with my mom and we did this little project together where we did our testimonies, I found out a lot about my mom and her childhood. And I realized in that moment that my mom had just as much trauma as I did when she was little, and if not more. And the things that she did, you know, grew up and started making bad choices as an adult is because she had disabilities that she was unaware of. And that's the case in our society, that a lot of people have disabilities they're not aware of, and our community stigmatizes these disabilities as, you know, oh, you're crazy or you're dumb or you're inadequate, and people don't want to really, you know, reach out and be vulnerable because they're afraid of stigma and ridicule. And our community doesn't really support people that, you know, that are mad or angry and, you know, have bad reactions to things. And I guess I just want to say in closing, I'm really grateful to be here, and I'm going to continue to keep advocating and help shedding the light on these issues. I look forward to coming back.
Thank you so much for your presence here today, Jackie. It's been wonderful, really. And thank you for being on Prison Pipeline.
Thank you. And I just want to give a shout out to everybody still incarcerated. If you're listening to this, stay up. Keep doing what you do. You're making the world a better place.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Yeah.
KBOO is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KBOO has been showing up for over 50 years. Give to KBOO today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten Free Gem, Wii Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give or call 503 231-8032. Support KABU, where music makes the movement.
The time is 6:59 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Hard Knock Radio.
What's up, y'all? It's your homegirl Mystic, and you are now listening to Hard Knock Radio.
You got the wizard right here on Hard Knock Radio.
Yeah, yeah, this is just a almighty Wu-Tang
giving you the news,
views,
and the truth on hip-hop.
This is Sister Soulja on Hard Knock Radio. Listen closely.
Peace out the revolution. This is Erykah Badu. It's the People's Station. Y'all, we in the Bay Area, and we're putting it down. We're conscious. We have our incense lit. And we got our candles burning, and they don't go out by night.
Now as we meditate, God is love. Love is a healing remedy. We're going to reach out to areas where man has seemed to have difficulty. As we concentrate that the gifts of the Holy Spirit might function, or what the secularist might speak of as the paranormal, let us believe. Let us believe. Sister Ingram, you're concerned about the losing of your sight. You're not able to see me clearly.